Also, under federal law, federal labor law, it says that a probationary period is only active if discussed before hiring and finalized and agreed upon by both parties.
So I never talked to you actually about this.
Okay, so then I went out to my car, and Karen comes out saying, "Oh, well, I'm sorry that this is just when first alarm calls me, I have to do this, and if you think it's there, talk to Mike on Monday." I said, "Excuse me, Karen, could you please tell me exactly what?" And Karen said to me, quote, "Last night, first alarm called me about your inappropriate behavior at the Armory." And I said, "Excuse me, Karen, I didn't work last night." She said, I says, "In fact, Karen, I haven't worked for 2 weeks." "Oh, well, this has to do with 2 weeks ago." So I says, "Excuse me, what you're trying to say is they waited 2 weeks, called you at home, didn't call the business number, called you at home, and told you that I had inappropriate behavior with the male guard, who you are now claiming is the permanent guard at the Armory, and this guard had never worked prior to this day with me at the Armory. It's a female who is willing to, you know, allocate. She gladly will state how wonderful and great it is."
What's your grievance process for appealing this?
As far as I know, none. I'm told I'm fired, and that's it. I just take it.
There is no grievance process for people who work for Karen Gillette.
Yeah, she said something like, "Go talk to Mike on Monday."
Yeah.
I've already lost how many days of work at this point? You know, they've hired gave someone. Well, actually, what I'm being fired for is supposedly the sexual harassment, which is the inappropriate behavior with the guard, which was actually dealt with by Sean, the monitor, who is now the Armory manager.
So you have a concern here. I guess my concern, because I don't know the facts other than what you've told me, although I'm not saying you're not telling me the truth, is the grievance process here, and also your concern that you think that perhaps this may be linked to your seeking some kind of end to employees rifling through donations intended for homeless people that don't reach them.
That and my constant beratement of preferential treatment for certain clients. Other employees' treatment of, or their inability to be neutral, their treatment of clients because they like or dislike or feel that they're a head case or these people are a hassle or I can't deal with it. And
the main thing is you're not really being given too much information about why you've been fired except the claim of that there was a sexual harassment case and that you didn't deal with it properly. We are running up against the hour, James. At 1:30, we have the little red hen will come in and peck us out of here unless we get rolling. You've been listening to James Ney, who is, I guess you might call him a homeless activist in a certain sense. I don't know. Are you a homeless activist?
I certainly am now. I've always spoken up for the homeless, but never outright like this. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of problems for doing this, but you know what? It's worth it, Robert. We all need to do something. We need to make this a better world. Let's care about each other. Let's quit with all the names. Let's say we're all Americans and let's do for each other.
And if anybody wants to respond if Karen wants to come on the air or anyone else who has a different view, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I have to say right now, Karen Gillette hasn't returned a call from me in months, but that isn't atypical. Karen tends to ignore my phone calls when I put them through to her. Wait, could this be Karen on the phone right now? Let's see what we got.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I hate to disappoint you, Robert. It's not Karen Gillette.
Oh, dear.
This is Vinny. I just wanted to quickly announce that Feed the People, which serves Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursday evenings in front of Logos Books.
At 5:30.
Will not be serving Monday in front of Logos Books. They will be serving in conjunction with the protest over by the bookshop Santa Cruz. So folks can go down and get some peanut butter and love sandwiches down there instead of in front of Logos on Monday.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Which actually brings me to the concluding comments on this show. I want to remind you, we'll give out James a chance to say a word or two, too, but Don't Sleep Tonight Night is going to actually kind of officially begin at 5 o'clock in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where Feed the People and Hot Soup from India Joe Schultz, I guess he's no longer with India Joe's, but he's a great chef, it'll be served at 5 o'clock in front of India Joe's, and we hope to have that soup continuing through the evening for those of you who are finding it cold. If we run into problems in terms of weather, we'll probably go under the eaves of Blockbuster Video near Cinema 9, wherever we can find some kind of shelter. And again, bring your cars down at 11, and we'll be having bring your hot coffee thermoses down. We'll be parking in front of on Pacific Avenue, but in the Bookshop Santa Cruz block, and then up near, I guess, further along if we get enough cars, to emphasize the fact that my car is my home, leave me alone. We're going to give the last few words to James here, who's been our guest, a very intelligent, articulate, and courageous guest. He's living outside. He has to suffer probably lots of criticism for what he said here today on the air. Let's hear from him, and then we're about to go into the Little Red Hen, and have your kids near the radio, because the hen always has some mother henning to do.
Thank you, Robert. Actually, really what I wanted to say was that for all of you extra people that are listening out there, because I asked you to, and I know there's a number of you out there, I'm going to be there tomorrow, and I challenge all of you and anybody else out there who's listening to come out there and be there with me, too. Bookshop Santa Cruz at 5 o'clock. Even if you want to come there and argue with me, come there and set me straight on some things. Come there and ask me to do something for you. You got something you need done? Come and ask. I'll do it. I'm not ashamed, and I'm not ashamed to say I'll be there, and I'm accepting the consequences of what I'm doing right here and right now. Let's get out there. Let's show we care a little bit about people. Be there tomorrow.
Can't be there at 5, be there at 6, 7, 8, 9, or 11, which is when, of course, it becomes illegal for people to sleep. Bring your vehicle if you can. If you can't, just bring yourself, and we'll have hot coffee and hot soup. Thanks for being with us, and stay tuned for the Little Red Hen. I will be returning at 6 o'clock on Thursdays with another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides here on 96.3 FM. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, callers, including critical callers, for calling in. That's what makes this show.
Am all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how that good old union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Oh,
which side are you on? Which side are you on?
My mother was a worker, and I'm a worker too, and I'll stick with the union until that battle's through.
Which side are
there were contract laborers brought over from France and the Low Countries, not good enough to be citizens, good enough to work their whole lives out, spitting up blood at the looms, not good enough to vote for all the good it would do them. Well, they struck, most of them women, 27,000, who are dying at the average age of 26 because of the dust in the weave rooms. Can you imagine that? Well, they struck. The issues were, of course, wages, hours, and conditions, like any strike. Well, the women met and talked about it amongst themselves, decided wages, hours, and conditions, that's important. But it takes more than those three things to be a woman, takes more than those three things to lead any kind of decent human life. On the next day, parading down the street, 2 years of parades, newspaper reporters noticed that there was a young woman carrying a large sign that said, "Bread, yes, but roses too." And Lawrence became the Bread and Roses Strike. And they marched those 2 bitter years. Hell, they had to ship the kids out of town because there was no way to feed them. They sang with Bread and Roses. As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, 1,000,000 darkened kitchens, 1,000 mill lofts gray, are brightened by the beauty a sudden sun discloses. And the people hear us singing bread and roses, bread and roses. As we come marching, marching, we battle too for men, for they are women's children, we'll mother them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts can starve as well as bodies, give us bread, but give us roses. As we come marching, marching, 100,000,000 dead go crying through our singing their ancient cry for bread. Small art and love and beauty their drudging spirits knew. Yes, it's bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we come marching, marching, we're standing proud and tall. The rising of the women is the rising of us all. No more the drudge and idler can the toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Right, well, today on the show we're going to finish the, or we're going to read more of the story Gwenna, the one that we started last week and had quite a few eruptions within that week, but that's okay. So, there we go. A mist shrouded on the hill and filled the valley all the next day. The trees seemed to drown in a sea of gray, and the sky was the same. Soon even the nearest rim of the hills disappeared. Gwenna knew there was no hope of seeing the mountain. She leaned on the kitchen windowsill, looking out. Everything was dim and dusk, neither light nor dark. Her father said, "It's an owl light." Gwenna's mother began to tremble and shake. The spoon dropped from her hand. She pulled the curtains over the window and said to her husband, "Bolt the door." He did as she said, pulling the bolt shut with a loud thud. "Gwenna," said her mother, "my child, don't be afraid. We will never let you go." Before Gwenna could ask her where, there were hoots and screeches and calls outside the house. "Don't listen," her mother said. "Don't look." Be as still as a stone. They pressed their hands over their ears and shut their eyes, but Gwenna heard the sounds. "Hoo, hoo," shrieked. "Hoo." She wanted to see. Slowly she lifted the curtain and peeked outside. An owl swooped near the window, and another. One by one, owl appeared out of the mist and vanished again, circling the house. Some were large, others small. One was snowy white. They flew by the window on silent wings, looking in at Gwenna. Then she looked back into their eyes. She found she could understand them. "Gwenna," called the owls. "Hoo-to-hoo, we have come for you." "Mama, Papa," Gwenna said, "how do the owls know my name?" But her mother and father kept their eyes shut and their hands over their ears. They were still as two statues, a man standing and a woman in her chair. Gwenna went to touch them, but they did not seem to feel her hand. Her father's sleeve was strangely cold. Then a fine hair stirred on her mother's hand. Mama, Papa, Gwenna tried to pull their hands from their eyes. She could not move them. Then she saw a shadow passing over their faces, gray as stone. Outside the window, outside the door, the owls called, "Tahoo, Gwenna, Tahoo, come with us." But Gwenna sank down onto her stool in horror. Then she jumped up. The stool was wood no more, but cold stone. The table, too, even the bread on the table. The fire flickered out in the hearth, and the air in the house grew heavy. Gwenna's heart sank in her chest. "I will soon be stone, too." "Ooh," called the owl, "come out, come with us." Gwenna tried to move. Her feet were heavy. She cried to the statues, "Mama, Papa, I must go, before it's too late." She saw the gray creeping across the floor like a shadow towards the wall and the door. A door of stone would be too heavy to open. Quickly, Gwenna laced up her shoes and put on her hooded cloak, and she ran to the door and pulled the bolt free. As soon as the door was half open, cold mist came swirling in. Slowly, softly, winding around the table and chairs around the two statues. "I must go," Gwenna whispered, choking back her tears. "Oh, gray ribbon of mist, keep my mama and papa safe." Then she went out of the house, but she could not close the door behind her. It had turned to stone. All she could see outside was a patch of ground where she stood. Everything else faded away into gray. Somewhere in the mist ahead, the owls called. There was no other sound. Slowly, Gwenna walked towards the voices. When she came to the gate and opened it, the hinges creaked. As they always did. But beyond the gate, it seemed, all the world was lost, and she was stepping into nothing, nowhere. Gwenna turned, looking back, but the house had vanished, too. As she lifted her hand, reaching into the mist to somehow say goodbye, a tiny owl appeared and perched on her arm. "Say goodbye, a tiny..." Oh. Her feathers were snowy white, tipped with silver, soft as cloud feathers, all the way to her talons. Her feet gripped Gwenna's arm gently above the wrist. She was no taller than her hand, and the little owl stared at Gwenna with eyes as bright as two gold moons, midnight in the center. "Little owl," she said to him, "I don't know where to go." He bobbed his head up and down and hooted, whistling like a small wooden flute. And other owls answered in the mist beyond the gate, "Follow us, we know the way." So Gwenna began to walk towards the owls' voices. She was more like a little old crone than ever. In her hooded cloak. The tiny owl stayed in her arms. Every few moments he hooted and the other owls answered, flying silently ahead. Twigs snapped under Gwenna's feet and she followed. She walked and walked. There was no telling how far or where or how long. Every stone she saw in the mist made her think of her mama and papa. "Hoo-hoo," called the little owl. "Hoo-hoo," called the others. Tangled branches and thorny briars caught at her in the mist. Many a time she tore her cloak free. Many a time her shoes sank in the mud. Many a time she stumbled and fell over logs and loomed in the way. The little owl snapped. Flapped his wings and balanced again on Gwenna's arm. "A little, oh, little owl," Gwenna said, "where are you taking me?" She was muddy and scratched and tired, and the damp chill of the mist went through her cloak. the ribbon pinched, and she could not forget the sorrow that weighed in her heart like a stone. At last the mist began to thin. Gwyneth saw tall columns of trees. She saw a large owl leaving a branch to fly ahead. Then she saw a wall of stone hung the curtain of ivy. One by one, the owl flew towards it, lifting the strand of ivy away from the talons. With their talons, they sat on branches on either side, holding the ivy curtain apart, and Gwyneth saw an opening there in the stone. The little owl turned his head to look at her. He blinked at her once. Then he flew from her arm into the dark opening. Gwyneth did not follow. The doorway into the stone before her seemed even deeper than night. She heard the flute of the little owl's voice echoing within. "Silly girl," she thought, "it is only a cave where you can lie down and rest." So she took a deep breath, and then she went inside. The ivy fell close behind her. Gwenna came into a large greco, filled with a soft silver light. The walls were stone, but the roof was open.
Coming your Mix 96 weekend, Faith Hill having fun with This Kiss, and I'm Charlie Wolf having fun.
Orphan Alien Film, fotografia nos 10 dólares. Ela sim quer ajudar. Atende o botão 408.
Ivy fell close behind her. Gwenna came into a large Greco filled with the soft silver light. The walls were stone. The walls were stone, but the roof was open. There were the owls coming to roost in the dark branches above. Below them, an old woman sat in the heart of the Greco, robed in a shawl of feathers. The tiny white owl was perched on her arm. "Ooh," said the old woman. "Thank you for bringing my little one home to me." Gwenna said, "He led the way, or I would have been lost." The old crone smiled at her. "You are truthful," she said. Upon her arm, the little owl stretched himself and fluffed his feathers. She lifted him up. "His name is Tobin." Gwenna stepped closer. With the silver light, she could not be afraid. "Who are you?" she asked the old woman. "I am the mother of the owls and many more. They are all my children, all your brothers and sisters." "But I have no brothers and sisters," Gwenna said. "I am alone, and now I have left my home." Looking down, she clenched at her cloak to keep from crying. My mama and papa have turned to stone." The mother of the owls clicked very softly inside. "Gwenna," she said, "I am your mother before your father and mother. Before you were born, I held you here in my arms. I touched you with the feather of my blessing. I sent you to the cradle, but your mother and father did not keep their promise." Gwenna looked up into the ancient woman's eyes. She found there a sorrow even greater than her own. The mother of the owl sighed again. Her sigh filled the Greco like a weary wind stirring the weary trees. Gwenna trembled. "What will happen to Mama and Papa? Will I ever see them again?" "Someday you may," said the old woman, "but not now. Do not be afraid of them. Even the stones are my children, and nothing can harm them." Then she opened her shawl and said, "Come." Every feather in the shawl was glowing silver and white, like the one that had hung over Gwenna's bed. She felt the light of the shawl enfolding her, fresh and peaceful as the light of the moon. Leaning into the old woman's breast, she heard the heartbeat there, a deep, quiet drum. "Mother, before my mother," Gwenna whispered, "may I call you grandmother?" Into her ear, the old woman whispered, "Yes." Then for every corner of the Greco, animals appeared. They must have been in the shadows or deep in burrows and dens. Grandmother said to them, "Here is your sister, Gwenna." Cautious and shy, the deer came closer and gazed at her. A coppery fox came and sniffed. The rabbits stood up to have a look. Their noses twitched up and down. They came to nibble, and the hem of her cloak. And Gwenna bent down to touch the soft fur behind their ears. The bear nudged Gwenna with his head, nearly pushed her over. It was only a greeting. She hugged him and buried her hands in his thick black fur. Then a mother wolf came closer, swinging her tail. Three puppies scrambled out and jumped, yipping and yapping. licking Gwenna's face with their warm tongues. Gwenna looked around in a wonder. So many sisters and brothers. There are more birds who flew down through the roof, chittering and chattering. And there were owls from, of course. Tobin was flying in circles around her head. Before long, everyone settled down. Grandmother said, "Now, my dear, take off your cloak and rest. You have come a long way." Looking down at Gwenna's muddy shoes, she asked, "Why did you walk?" "How else could I go, Grandmother?" Gwenna laid her cloak aside. "You have wings," Grandmother said. "They were my gift to you. But my dear child, how can anyone fly with their wings inside your dress?" She peered at the bumps on Gwenna's back. "Let me see." Gwenna took off her dress and stood in her petticoat. Grandmother frowned. One bonny finger touched the ribbon. "What are these?" "These are ribbons, snow white ribbons, to keep me safe, said Grandma. Then Grandmother's eyes flashed. Her silver light turned into lightning. Gwenna saw something gleam in the old woman's hand, sharp as a blade. Before she could move, Grandmother took hold of her ribbons. She slipped the blade up under the knot and said, "Ribbon, ribbons, binding ribbons, set my child free." An owl screeched fast as a lightning stroke and blade cut through the knot. Then Grandmother pulled the ends of the ribbons crisscross, uncross, unwinding, unbinding. Turning Gwenna this way and that, till she nearly fell down dizzy. In a daze, she saw Grandma's hand flinging the ribbons down to the ground. She heard the bear rumbling and growling. He tore at the ribbon with his claws. The fox and the wolf pups ran up to them, snarling and pulling the ribbon. The ribbon was shredded. Even Tobin swooped down with his sharp talons. Then the rabbits carried the shred away until there was nothing left of the snow-white ribbon. Nothing at all. Grandma said. Her silver light was calm again in the Greco was quiet. Gwenna swayed on her feet. The ache in her back spread into every part of her. Grandmother cooned softly, as if to a wounded bird. Gently she pulled one of Gwenna's wings partly open. "See," she said. Gwenna turned and saw her own wings for the first time. Then Grandmother pulled the other partly open too. "Wings," Gwenna whispered. "I do have wings. Oh, I never knew." And hot, stinging tears ran down her cheeks. "Gently, gently." Grandmother pulled the wings all the way open. The sharp pain shot through each one like fire. "Oh, it hurts," Gwenna cried. Her mother nodded, her own eyes filled with tears. "It means your wings are alive," she said. "They are only crippled and sore. The feathers are matted, twisted and bent, grown all wrong under the ribbons. Even the bones hurt." Gwenna didn't dare to ask if she would ever fly. "Come," Grandmother said. She led her to a bed soft, dry heather and moss. "Lay yourself down while I go and make you a broth." Gwenna crawled into the bed, and with a deep sigh, she buried her face in the sweet-smelling moss. Tobin flew to an old root beside her. When Grandmother went to another part of the Greco and clattered among the clay jars and pots, then the wolf puppies came to the bed and snuggled close to Gwenna. The mother wolf came too. and began to lick her wings. She licked and licked and licked with her patient tongue to smooth and soften the feathers to comfort her sister Gwenna. Gwenna was nearly asleep when grandmother came with a steaming mug. "Drink this," she said. "It is made for healing from healing roots and leaves." Gwenna raised herself enough to drink the bitter broth, and she sank into the bed again. As she lay there, she felt grandmother's two hands on her back, on the place where each wing grew. She felt something flowing from her hands, warm as summer sunshine. The warm flowed like rivers into her wings, all through the long, thin bones, up and down the shaft of every feather for a long time. Gwenna felt it pour over her, soaking into her wings like warmest water, until all the pain was washed away. Grandmother lifted her hands. "Rest now, my child," she said, and soon, with the mother wolf on one side and the pups still nestled close on the other, Gwenna fell asleep. When Gwen awoke, there was blue sky in the branches above, and the baby birds were busy. She saw six toads in a row by the bed. One of them blinked. "Good day to you, little brother," she said, blinking herself. The wolf and her puppies were gone, but Tobin was still there, asleep on the old fruit by the bed. He opened one eye and looked at her. Then he closed it again. Gwenna laid under a blanket of feathers. She thought of her bed at home, and the poor mama, and her poor mama and papa. Sorrow fluttered awake in her heart like a silent bird. She sat up, and the feathers dragged along with her. Then she remembered. Wings, my own wings. Gwenna touched the feathers. Now they were soft and sleek and firm, just as they should be. Her own feathers. They glowed with the colors of earth, spotted with lights and dampled with darker shadows. She wondered, will I really fly? Grandmother came to the foot of the bed. It's a fine day, she said, holding up a fresh white petticoat and a new dress. The dress was many colors of brown, all woven together. It had two pockets and big sleeves and two openings in the back, cleverly made, just right for wings. Gwenna stood up, and grandmother helped her into the petticoat, then the dress. It fit Gwenna perfectly. "This will keep you warm wherever you go," grandmother told her. "It is woven of fleece and furs the animals have given." "Thank you," Gwenna said, and tucking her hand into the warm pocket, she asked, "Where will I be going? Is it cold there?" The woman smiled. "Even on a sunny day, it is cold high up in the sky." Gwenna's heart jumped. Then she would fly. She felt a tingle in her wings, but try as she might, she could not raise them. Her wings only sagged to the side, and the feathers shivered all the way to the longest tips, touching the Greco floor. "They're too heavy," she sighed. "Piffle," Grandma said. "No birdling of mine has wings that are too heavy. Yours are only weak. They have never been tried, and a birdling needs to be strong if she is ever going to fly. So come and have your breakfast." The smell of the hot honey porridge came to Gwenna's nose. She was very hungry, so she went to the table and did what she could with her clumsy wings to sit down without crushing the feathers. Then when her bowl was empty and filled and emptied again, grandmother brought Gwenna's shoes. All the mud was gone, and there were new laces. Go out to the meadow yonder, grandmother said. There you will find a mossy crag. Many a young birds have flown from there. Watch and see how many children fly, and they all have their ways, and so will you. Only be gentle and slow. Your wings will teach you. Will Topin come? Gwenna turned to find him, but he was still asleep on the bed. Of course, it is day. All the owls there were sleeping. So Gwenna didn't wait another moment. She kissed grandmother's cheek and went out through the ivy curtain alone to find the meadow. Not a shred of mist was left in the forest. Gwenna soon found her way and came out into a wide open place. There she saw a rocky crag. The top was high as a house and covered with a thatch of moss. Gwenna looked for a way to climb up it, but when her hand touched the cold stone, she stopped. Maybe a stone can tell what it knows to another stone, she thought. So she whispered into the crevice in the cave, Mama, Papa, I am going to learn to fly. Then she clambered all the way to the top. Above the brown trees, all above the meadow, the sky seemed to reach up forever past the highest cloud. There was the swallows swooping to and fro, the noisy crows flapping over the trees. Gwenna stood on top of the crag and tried again to raise her wings. How will I ever fly, she thought, if I can't even lift a feather? Below her, the faded meadow grass seemed a long way to fall. Not knowing what else to do, slowly she opened her arms, reaching wide, and to her surprise, slowly her wings opened too. The feathers stretched far past her fingers to either side. When she lifted her arms slowly, her wings lifted too, and she was lower. Then she lowered them. Her wings went down. Everywhere.